Again, good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. This has been a busy weekend for our community. For me, yesterday in the morning we had a workshop, three-hour workshop entitled "To Be in the World and Not of the World." It was specifically oriented toward our lives as lay people, our lives as householders. Our lives fully entwined in the world of all types of relationships, personal, interpersonal, work, community, society, and the challenge of how can I live in this world the way it is, with equanimity, peaceful mind, open-heartedness, and that was yesterday. And then last night we had a loving kindness, full moon loving kindness sort of practice ceremony. And today we have the Dharma of Scrooge. It's interesting because one of the things among several that I stressed to the participants in the workshop was the necessity of not just keeping some of the fundamental teachings of the Buddha, such as cause and effect and impermanence, just as intellectualizations and conceptualizations, but to really see that they are the fundamental operant laws of this world, and to understand that certainly has a lot to do with ameliorating a lot of our afflictive emotions. So I'm only saying that because this morning, in sharing the story of Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge in the Christmas Carol, I was always struck before I began sharing it with the community that this is very much a Buddhist story. It is a story about understanding causes and conditions, and understanding impermanence, and most importantly, it's a story about awakening and transformation. So I think it's a very profound story and has lots of lessons that we can all learn from. I realize I've been doing this for quite a number of years now, before Christmas, as well as most people are familiar with the story, having seen the various, so many different versions of it, or read the book. So I think one of the gifts of our practice of learning to live in the present moment and not carry around the past is that even though we might have heard things many times, if we approach the moment totally fresh and open, it's as if we've never heard it, or this is the first time. So this is always our challenge in this life. Can I show up without the baggage of the past, without the baggage of my preconceptions based on past experience, and be open and willing to have a very intimate and creative experience with whatever is arising now? That's whether it's the Christmas Carol, or whether it's people, situations, life, work. In truth, everything is always new and fresh. So, settle back. I'm not going to read you the whole story, but I'm going to pick parts of it and then comment on it. I think it's a truth that, learning intellectually and conceptually, analytically, is one way of learning. But oftentimes, stories, parables, myths often get into us deeper. Even somebody sharing an anecdote about something often helps us understand something much more quickly and remember it than a concept, because it has some personal juice to it. So I think, again, we may forget about the teachings of impermanence and causing conditions. We may forget about the capacity that all beings have to awaken and transform. But if we remember Scrooge, life of Scrooge, we will remember. So please settle back and enjoy the story of Scrooge, again written by Charles Dickens. Obviously a very man who soared deeply into life. Basically the setting is 17th century England, London. Scrooge is some kind of businessman, but sort of in the business of money and ledgers, and we're never quite sure what he does. But he's he doesn't have like a business, but he's somehow it's a money business that he has. His partner Marley has died 7 years ago, and Scrooge never took the time to paint out his name. And so there's a little description of Scrooge, so you get a feel for him. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say with happy looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle, no children asked him what time it was, no man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a street, plus nobody ever inquired of Scrooge. Even the blind men's dogs appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming, would tuck their owners into the doorways to get away. And then the dogs were very happy. But Scrooge didn't care. He was the very thing he liked. To edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance, was what the knowing one call nuts to Scrooge. So we get Scrooge as what? He's a miser. He's a miser. He's totally consumed with the affairs of money. He has no relationships at all, no friendships, no family. He's totally cut off. He just lives. He lives to work. That's the whole meaning of his life, is his work. So now the story begins. Once upon a time, and it was Christmas Eve, he was busy in his counting house, counting out his money, I guess. It was a cold, bleak, biting weather. And then again, I'm going to kind of move through it. The door of his counting house was always open, so he had one clerk, and he had always had the door to his office open so he could keep his eye on his clerk, who worked in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of a tank, always copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was even smaller, that it looked like it probably there was only one coal. But he could never replenish it because the box of coal was in Scrooge's office, and Scrooge, would always give him a hard time about, coal is money. I don't pay you to be warm. So, you get a sense. So this poor guy, there's actually a scene where he kind of warms his hand over the candle that's kind of lighting up the office. All of a sudden, the door opens, and a cheerful voice shouts, "A Merry Christmas, Uncle, God save you." It was the voice of his nephew. And Scrooge says what he's most probably well known for. He says, "Bah, humbug." That was his, and his nephew says, "Christmas a humbug, Uncle, you don't really mean that." I do. "Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough." Another inkling of what Scrooge is about. What right have the poor to be happy or to celebrate anything, right? Their poverty should always be a damper to anything, and all they should think about is advancing themselves out of poverty, but never to enjoy life at all. And so he says, "You're poor enough. But come on, Uncle, what right have you to be so dismal like the way you are? So morose, you're rich enough." It's a good retort. So again, Scrooge says, "Bah, humbug." And the nephew says, "Don't be cross, uncle. What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. Fie on Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer. A time for balancing your books and having every item in them through a round dozen a month dead against you. Like, you know, you're just in debt. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on their lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart." So, you know, he should. So there's nothing sort of passive about, you know, he's a strong advocate for his position in life, right? So, and again, you know, Scrooge is very much an extreme portrait, but I think, you know, Dickens as an author is making a point here. He's pointing to a type of human being, or perhaps a type within ourselves. And so his nephew says, you know, "Uncle, there are many things from which I might have derived good in this life, but which I have not profited, including Christmas. But I'm sure that I've always thought that, you know, beside the religious tones of Christmas, that Christmas is a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time that I know of when men and women seem by one consent to open up their shut up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And though, uncle, even though it's never put a scrap of gold in my pocket, I believe Christmas has done me good, will do me good, and I say God bless it." So, yeah. So it's interesting. He says, you know, and yet, whatever Christmas is about, it seems to be a time of year where perhaps all too briefly, human beings open up their vision. They become aware that there are other people who are needier than them, and perhaps open their pocket and their hearts. And when we see that at Christmas time, often people, you know, do kind of charitable giving to those communities in town that actually help the poor, the homeless, etc., and just seem much more friendly. I don't know if it's still that way, but it sort of used to be that way. People much more open. And then, you know, the son, the nephew leaves him, his uncle, he invites him to Christmas dinner. Scrooge kind of does bah humbug as if he'd ever come to a Christmas dinner. And then as the nephew goes out, two portly gentlemen come in and say, "Scrooge and Marley, I believe. Who am I talking to, Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?" Scrooge says, "Mr. Marley has been dead for 7 years. And they say, "We have no doubt that his liberality will be continued by his surviving partner." So obviously, these are two men who are obviously taking a subscription for charity, you know. Okay. "At this festive time of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessity. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts," right? And we could certainly amplify that today, putting that in the millions, if not more. Scrooge's answer: "Are there no prisons?" Very interesting. Even though debtors' prisons are no longer, and yet certainly many poor people are in prison, end up in prison. And so Scrooge says, "Yeah, I mean, you know, aren't there any prisons, you know, to hold these people?" And the gentlemen say, "Plenty of prisons and the workhouses." So in those days, poor people were sent to workhouses where they had to work. "Are they still around?" They are. "I wish they weren't. And are the poor laws still in vigor?" Yes, they are, very busy. "Oh, I was afraid from what you said that something had occurred to stop their useful course. I'm very glad to hear that." Right? So that's obviously his way of dealing with the difficulties of people being poor is prisons, workhouses, kinds of punitive kinds of things. And there we go. We know that culture is still alive in our modern time. Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind and body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise funds to buy the poor some meat and drink and a means of warmth at this time of years. What can I put you down for? Obviously, this man has not figured out who he's dealing with yet. Scrooge replies, nothing. This man, still not getting it, says, I get it. You want to be anonymous. Scrooge says, no, I want to be left alone, since you ask me. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support all the establishments I mentioned. That's enough, and those who are badly off must go there. And he says, but many people would rather die than go there. Well, if they'd rather die, they'd better do it. Decrease the surplus population, which was a term at that time. For certain sectors of the society, you know, they were like surplus. Surplus meaning what? Not needed. Well, he says, it's all of this is none of my business. It's enough of a man to understand his own business and not interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen. So everybody kind of get a sense of who we're dealing with here. And so I'll just skip ahead. Basically, we see him going home. On his way home, he has this funny experience where he's when he gets to his door, the knocker on the door all of a sudden transforms into his Marley's face, you know, his business partner face. That kind of shakes him up a little bit, but not enough. He goes in, but he's a little bit worried. Gets up, goes to bed. It's a dark, cold, dreary house he lives in, and he's just getting ready for bed. And all of a sudden, bells start ringing, and he hears sounds on the steps. He's a little concerned, and all of a sudden, the door to his room's open. There he sees a ghost, Marley's ghost. The same face, the same Marley in his pigtail, waistcoat, tights, and boots. It looked just like him. Of course, he was ghostly. And the only very thing interesting, besides he did have this ghostly, terrible look about him, was he had a chain around him. It was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. So I think you get the point. And then they have some dialogue. Scrooge's like, what are you doing here? Do you believe in me? Scrooge kind of is saying, I must have indigestion or something, you're some kind of apparition, you really can't be real. And Marley just kind of lets out a blood-curdling scream and starts shaking his chains. And Scrooge falls upon his knees. Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Man of worldly mind, do you believe in me now or not? I do. I must, but why do spirits walk the earth? And why have you come to me? And Marley says, it is required of every human being that the spirit within them should walk abroad among his fellow beings, travel far and wide. Right? But if that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. Okay, so I think you all get that, right? He's saying, yeah, this is the karmic retribution, so to speak. If during one's life one has not been willing to look around at the fellow beings who are walking this life, journeying in this life with us, right? And to see them and to be aware of their condition. If that is not a case, because we're so singularly focused just on ourself and our own endeavors, and we do not have any kind of sense of interconnection, you know, with the rest of humanity in the world. If we don't do that, we'll have to do that as ghosts wander about. And Scrooge says, now he's trembling. Why? What the fetters you have around you, you know, that chain? And then again, this is very, he says, the ghost says, I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it of my own free will, and I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? So this is, again, you know, this is karma. We all create our own karma through the actions of our body, speech, and mind. I'm talking now in Buddhist language, but he says, yeah, this chain wasn't put upon me. This is the chain I forged in life through my own actions, right? So this is very profound. We often, look for the cause of our chains as being outside us, caused by others. And yet, in truth, the chains we wear in this life, the chains are something that bind us. We have forged ourselves, because again, they only exist within our own mind. They don't exist anywhere else. It's only in this ghostly way that we see the chains and what the chains are about. But in reality, our chains are within. Is pattern strange to you? Scrooge trembled. Or would you know that the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? Would you want to know, he's saying, while you're still alive, the chain that's around you? It is full and heavy and as long as this one. And it was 7 Christmases ago when I died. And you know what? Ever since then, you've been laboring on it. It is now quite ponderous. Scrooge is now trembling and says, Jacob, can't you say anything nice to me, any comforting to me? You're scaring me. Really, what's going? And then after this dialogue, he says, again, very famous, he says, but Jacob, because Jacob's, you know, saying about this miserable existence he's had for 7 years, just wandering, you know, in this heavy chain, and, you know, and Scrooge is going, you know, because he can't quite understand why this painful, existence. And he says, but Jacob, you were always a good man of business. You know, like you were always a good man of business. Business, cried the ghost, wringing its hands. Mankind, humankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. I think that's very clear, isn't it? You know, and again, it puts our life back in perspective, because oftentimes our perspective in life becomes very narrow. All of us get caught up in the minutiae of our life, our work, our careers, you know what I'm saying? In our to-do lists. And here we find, Marley, obviously the voice of Dickens, saying, no, you know, our business as human beings is to take care of one another, to be kind to one another, to be compassionate of one another, to be benevolent. This is the true business of a human being. So, very wonderful. And Scrooge says to the ghost, "Why are you so hard on me? Why are you so flowery?" And the ghost says, "There is no light part of my penance," what he's experienced. "And I am here tonight to warn you that you have still a chance, hope of escaping my fate, a chance and a hope of my procuring Abernethy." So it sounds as if Marley is saying, "I have intervened with the forces of the universe. I've been able to come here to warn you of the karma that you're creating in your life, to show you by looking at me what awaits you at your death." Obviously, a lot of pain. And he kind of gives him a heads up that he'll be visited by three spirits in the evening, and that Marley should pay attention to them. And then he kind of backs out the window. And it's very interesting because he then says, so Marley kind of, you know, he's a ghost. He goes, you know, out the window, but doesn't open the window, just goes out. And Scrooge goes over, opens the window, and he looks out, and he's surprised because in the air there are all these confused noises, incoherent sounds of lamentation, regret, wailings of inexpressible sorrowful and self-accusatory. It's like a mourning dirge out there. He looks out, and the air was filled with phantoms, wandering this way and that, moaning as they went. Every one of them wore similar chains to Marley's ghost. Some were linked together, some were free. Some had been known to Scrooge in their lives, but all of them seemed miserable. So again, he's just amplifying that Marley's not the only one experiencing this result of becoming a ghost of their own creation and forced to wander. And of course, one of the things they said here is, you know, one of the downfalls of being a ghost is you can't do anything about it. You know, you can't contact people in the material world. So you're just kind of, you're just kind of doomed to this ghostly existence. So now we get to the matter at hand, which I think is so profound. So step one, all of a sudden, there's a wake-up call, right, to Scrooge. You know, you are creating misery. You know, you're so, you know, this is not a, you're not on a good path. Look where it's going to lead you. You know, great, great, great suffering, endless suffering. You know, he goes to bed, and sure enough, at 1 p.m., 1 a.m., you know, he gets his first visit. You know, the room lights up. Strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave the person an appearance of there but not there, and yet sort of being of a childlike proportion. So it had all kinds of strange things with its outfit, but the strangest thing of all was that on the crown of its head, there was a bright, clear jet of light. And that was what was lighting up everything in the room. But it also had a cap that could be an extinguisher, which it was holding under its arm. So to me, what does this mean? So this is the ghost of the past, right? Christmas past. So we're, the journey is past, present, and future, right? Sort of the world of time that we all live in. And this first is the spirit of Christmas past, and it has a light, you see. And with that light, it can see the past, you see. But it also has a cap to extinguish it. When the cap is extinguished, things are dark. And I think that's kind of metaphorical, right? that we all have that light. If we want to turn it on, we all have that light where we can clearly see our past and how it has led to this moment. But most people don't, or they take it on and off. Sometimes they put it on, sometimes they take it off. They only put it on for this one, they don't put it on for that one. But the spirit, it just burns capacitively. And then it has other incredible things about it. Its form keeps changing, you know. And I think that's metaphorical too, because during the course of our lifetime, we can look at our life and past experiences in myriad different ways, myriad different interpretations, right? And so I think that's what he's saying about the spirit of the past has this kind of formlessness, its shape keeps changing. You know, we had a good past, we had a bad past. We had a good and a bad past. You know, this person was good, then they were bad, then they were good, you know. So even we ourselves can endlessly be reinterpreting and our past. And then there's a little dialogue where Scrooge, you know, says, you know, could you put that cap on that light? It's kind of bright. So anyhow, they have, you know. So the bottom line, the ghost says, I'm here for your welfare, for your reclamation. Right, because Scrooge is kind of reluctant to go, because the spirit wants to take him on a journey. Scrooge is very reluctant. You know, why are you here? Why are you here? He's scared. I'm here for your welfare. I'm here for your reclamation. Put out a strong hand, clasped him by the arm, and kind of said, rise and walk with me. And off they went. out into the night, flying. And Scrooge is going, but it's cold. I'm so cold. But anyhow, I'm mortal. I'm liable to fall. But the spirit says, do not worry. And so they passed through the wall, they passed through the open country, they passed out of London, and all of a sudden they come to a place that's very familiar to Scrooge. It's where he was, where he grew up, where he was a boy. He was conscious of 1,000 odors floating in the air, each one connected to 1,000 thoughts, hopes, joys, cares, long forgotten. The ghost says, your lip is trembling. And what is that upon your cheek? A tear, first time. Right? Scrooge is remembering his childhood, obviously a time when he was very different. And something is touching him. And when he gets connected to that pure time in his life. And they walk along, and, you know, Scrooge recognizes many things. And then the ghost says a very interesting thing to him. He says, these are but shadows of the things that have been. They have no consciousness of us. So many of us have lots of memories, don't we? Lots of memories of our past. They often almost seem real to us, right? Of people and places, of ourselves. We have all kinds of memories. And he says, but these aren't real. They're just shadows. Right, like a shadow is just a shadow of the real thing, right? So these are just shadows of things that have been. So he's also telling Scrooge, as they make this journey, you are aware of them, but they have no awareness of you. They're just shadows. They're not real. Okay, this is very important, because many of us see our past as something real. And then he takes him to the school. I guess Scrooge was, I think his mother had died young, and his father was too painful for him to be, and sent him to a boarding school. And they see it's a Christmas Eve, school's deserted, a solitary child neglected by her friends is there alone. And Scrooge knew who that was, and he sobbed. Very interesting, right? He sobbed. He got in touch with that pain, you know, of childhood, of being alone, deserted, right? His father didn't want him to come home for Christmas. Everybody else did. And anyhow, so there's lots of stuff and memories. Scrooge sees the little boys and all alone, and all of a sudden, Scrooge sort of stops, and he says out loud, I wish, but it's too late. And the spirit says, what are you talking about, sort of? And Scrooge says, you know, last night there was a boy who came to my my place of business and was singing Christmas carols, a poor boy, you know, for money, and he realized, you know, nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should have given him something. So you see, already Scrooge is beginning to melt. Why is he beginning to melt? He's getting in touch with himself. Right? It's really as simple as that. Oh, and anyhow, you know, his life goes on. And all of a sudden, the next major thing is his first employer, right? So now he's grown up, he's working in an accounting house, he's a clerk, and he's working for Fezziwig. And again, he sees him and he says, bless my heart, it's old Fezziwig alive again. And Scrooge is happy, because Fezziwig is not a businessman like him, right? Fezziwig is a happy man, and they see him, you know, it's Christmas Eve, and he lets everybody off early, and he has a big party, and there's dancing, and there's singing, and there's lots of food, and, you know, and Fezziwig is just the life of the party. I mean, it sounds like he's a delightful human being. And Scrooge remembers, he sees himself participating, right? So again, now he's in his late teens, early 20s, starting his life. And he sees how happy he was, you know, and Fezziwig was like a father to him, took him under his wing, and he just saw himself. And Scrooge, you know, says something positive. And the ghost says, what's he doing? You know, he just spending a little money to make these silly people happy. You know. Why should people be in gratitude? I mean, he spent a little bit of money to give a party, and Scrooge says, no, it's not small. He just spent a few pounds of money. You know, why should you praise Fezziwig? And now Scrooge says, but it's not that. All of a sudden, like speaking like his former self. It isn't that spirit. Fezziwig has the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. So he's really talking about, even if someone who's a businessman has the capacity, right, of creating happiness in the employees or not. Save that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it's impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. Right. So, continues to warm up. And then he, fast forward, he had a fiance, and he and his fiance are talking together. And she's saying, Another idol has displaced me. And if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to, there is no reason for me to grieve. She's basically ending the relationship because she says, someone else has replaced me. What idol has displaced you, he says. And she says, a golden one. And he says, no, this is the even-handed dealing of the world. There is nothing on which is so hard as poverty, and there's nothing it professes to condemn as the pursuit of wealth. She says, you fear the world too much. All your other hopes have merged into the hope. Anyhow, all your nobler aspirations have fallen off one by one until you have just one passion left, gain, gain, gain. What then, he says, so I've grown wiser, but I haven't changed toward you. Anyhow, so she's basically ended the relationship because she says, you know, you're not here anymore. Your main interest in life is just money, 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 getting ahead, getting ahead, getting ahead. That which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. When they were young, they were one. They were together. But now they've separated because his aspirations and her aspirations are different. So, very painful memory of him. Let me move on. And actually, you know, just to finish him off, he takes her to this other house, and he looks in this room, and there's his fiancée. She's now married. She has a bunch of kids. It's Christmas Eve. They're all happy, and Scrooge feels really sad. He realizes, you know, this could have been his. Spirit, he says in a broken voice, remove me. I told you that these were the shadows of things that have been, that they are what they are. Do not blame me. You know, I'm just showing you the truth. Remove me. I can't bear it anymore. He turned upon the ghost and seen it look upon him with a face in which some ways were stranger than he'd ever seen. Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no longer. And they kind of struggled with each other. Scrooge was trying to, you know, put the light back on him. But the light was burning brighter and brighter and brighter. And he finally was able to get the cap on top. And at that time, Scrooge pushed down with his full force, trying his best to hide the light. But it still streamed out from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. So, you know. It's like he couldn't put the genie back in the bottle. He was trying to, right? But something had been shown to him, which was only causing him great pain. Right? This is often where we begin. We have to come to terms with ourselves. We have to come to terms with our life. We have to acknowledge that the way we lived has not produced real happiness. Obviously, it's produced just a lot of pain. So he gets back into bed, very happy to find out he's back in bed, all just maybe a dream. And then he has another visit. And this is, again, I won't spend too much time here. This is the spirit of Christmas present. And if you remember, it's a big, jolly, jolly, big, jolly spirit of Christmas, you know, and happy and big and full and, you know, richly dressed like Father Christmas, you know, but anyhow. And, you know, laughing and jolly and, you know. And it's basically he takes, again, remember you saw how Scrooge celebrates Christmas Eve, right? Alone in his own darkness. So he takes him out into the world and he shows him all the streets, you know. And again, you know, I mean, if you went into the streets, you know, you'd see again. People are shopping, people are buying food, people are preparing for the holiday, you know, everybody's wishing everybody Merry Christmas, you know, I mean, it's And he goes on, and actually in the writings on this, they say that it was actually this book. Before then, the English didn't really celebrate Christmas with this kind of fullness, you know, of parties and rich foods, you know, that it was really this ideal scene of a Victorian Christmas that Dickens wrote then became the model for people of how they had to be on Christmas. It's an interesting thing where in those days, you know, poor people didn't have ovens. So they would take, if they wanted to cook something, you know, in an oven, they would have to take it to the baker's ovens. The bakers would kind of bake things for them. And there's some kind of dialogue, because I guess certain people in the Christian establishment wanted all the bakeries closed on the seventh day, on Sunday, because it was a holy day, and yet obviously that caused great difficulty for the poor. And the Spirit says something very interesting, like obviously Dickens, speaking for Dickens. There are some upon the earth of yours who lay claim to know us. He means, so like he's like the Spirit of true Christianity. And who do their deeds of passion, pride, ill will, hatred, envy, bigotry, and selfishness in our name. But they are strange to us. They are not our kith and kin. Remember that and change their doings, or attribute their doings to them and not us. And we know that today there are many people in the name of religion, you know, postulate all kinds of things that do harm to people, and yet they say it is the way. And then they go about, they see Bob Cratchit's, you know, so he takes them all, the highfalutin ones, all the beautiful ones, like going down, I grew up in New York, it's like going down Fifth Avenue and seeing all the beautiful stores and everybody's out and, you know, everything's lit up. And then he takes them to Bob Cratchit's house, much more impoverished because of what Scrooge pays him, but yet they're happy. He's his wife, his children, they're all good to know another. They're celebrating together. He sees, you know, remember they had a son, Tiny Tim, who was obviously very sickly. And Scrooge says, with an interest he had never felt before, is Tiny Tim going to live? And the ghost says, I see a vacant seat in the chimney corner, a crutch without an owner. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die. No, 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 no. Tell me if we can get him spared. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none of my race will ever find him here alive. And then the Spirit, looking right at Scrooge, says, so what? Isn't it better that he die and decrease the surplus population? Remember somebody who said that not too long ago. So obviously, you know, Scrooge. It's no longer a concept like the surplus population. Now the surplus population is becoming human beings, and he sees it different. Scrooge hung his head when he heard his own words thrown back at him. Man, if you be in heart, forbear that wicked cant until you've discovered what the surplus is and where it is. Will you decide who should live and who should die? It may be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child. Anyhow. Yeah, and then he takes him around, he takes him all over, he takes him to the mining districts, and he sees again very poor people, miners, hard workers, but they're celebrating Christmas. He takes him out onto the sea to boats, and to lighthouses, and people are celebrating Christmas. And he takes him, he finally takes him to his nephew's house, where they're all celebrating Christmas Eve. Nobody's making merry. And again, they're actually talking about Scrooge, and the nephew's saying, yeah, you know, I feel bad for him. Right? So that's why every year I give him a chance to invite us. He's all alone. I'm doing my best to change him. I said, if somehow all my efforts to do good and to bring some kindness, at the end of his life, he leaves 50 pounds to his poor clerk, Barb Cratchit, well, then I'd be happy that all my efforts have come to fruition. Much they saw and far they went. Many homes they visited, always with an happy end. They stood by sick beds, foreign lands, struggling people, and anyhow, almshouses, hospitals, jails, wherever they went. So the spirit, he had this, this little magic thing. He could sprinkle like fairy dust. He could sprinkle Christmas dust. So he visited all these places. And again, he was able in the moment, in the spirit of Christmas, in all these places of, so much suffering, he was able, at least momentarily, to create happiness and well-being. And then something very strange. The spirit's about to take leave, and Scrooge says, "Excuse me, but I see something like some claws sticking." Remember these big robes sticking out. "No," he said. "Look here. There's actually flesh upon that claw." And he pulled back his robe, and there were two little children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable, kneeling down at his feet. They were a boy and a girl, yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish. No change, no degradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade through all the mysteries of wonderful creation, as monsters half so horrible. Scrooge says, "Spirit, are these your children?" "No." Here he says, "Man's, they're the children of human beings. They cling to me, they're appealing to me. This boy is ignorance, this girl is want." Right? "Beware of them both, but most of all, beware of this boy, because on his brow I see written that which is doom, unless the writing be erased." Very interesting. When you see, these poor people, on the one hand, there's a child of want and need, but on the other hand, because there's been some deprivation, they're ignorant of another way. And so he says, "Be careful, you will reap something. Your own doom, if you don't attend to the people." And then that ends. And now, we only have a little time, so I do want to finish the story. So he's visited by the final phantom, gravely, silently, shrouded in deep black, its head, its face, its form, all concealed, except he's got an outstretched hand. "Am I in the presence?" So now, he's a little more open. Scrooge says, "Am I in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come?" No answer, just pointing. "You're about to show me the shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in time before us. Is not so?" No answer. "Ghosts of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good and I hope to live like another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?" No reply. Right? So this is cause and effect, right? We see the causes that created Scrooge and brought him into the present. And we see how in the present, how different he is than other people. And now we see what his future is going to be based on his causes and conditions. But Scrooge is hopeful now. He said, "I've learned something, right? please, please, you know, and he's kind of positive. And he says, the night is waning fast, time is precious. I know, lead on. You see how he's engaged now. And then, so this phantom spirit takes him through these various kinds of scenarios. Business people talking about somebody who had died and an old skinflint and who would want to go to his funeral. But, you know, if maybe they serve a decent lunch, they'll go. And then he goes to a very poor, broken down, foul, narrow, ugly part of town. And in sort of a rag shop, a junk shop, a pawn shop, there are these three people selling, used goods. And they all kind of know each other. They all show up and they turn out, these are Scrooge's landlady, his cleaning lady, and the undertaker who came to get his body. And basically they've stripped everything out of his room, off his bed, and now they're selling him and, you know, selling all the stuff to get some money. And talking about, this miser who died all alone. He's taken to this dark, empty house with this figure laid it out with a sheet over it, you know, just a poor sheet. Nobody present, just alone in his room. Spirit, he said, this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I won't leave its lesson. Trust me, let us go. And then he says, isn't there anybody that in any way takes any consolation or any joy or any happiness, in this man's death? And the spirit takes him to one. And it turns out these are people that were in debt to Scrooge, and they thought he was about to, foreclose on them, whatever. And they're very happy because they just found out that he died, which means, he won't be foreclosing on them anytime soon. So those are the only people who are happy for him. And again, he says, let me see some. I mean, because he sees such a horrible death of this, whoever this person is. And then he says, can't you show me, some kind of a gentler death? And he takes him to the Cratchit's house. Tiny Tim has died. Everybody is very sad, but kind of sweet with each other. So he sees another kind of death. And then he takes him to, a graveyard. Points in the direction of a gravestone. Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are these the shadows of things that may be? This is very important. This is really, in terms of the, remember I said cause and effect and impermanence. It's like, is it fate? Because of all these causes and conditions in the past, is what's going to happen definitely going to happen? Or is it a maybe? Is there any wiggle room? Is there any chance for change? Ghost sense nothing, still pointing to the grave. Human beings, their course in life will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it's true, say it's true. Right? Which is, again, why we're here. Right? Is change possible? Can I change my life? Can I change the actions of my body, speech, and mind? Can I kind of reinvent myself? That's what Scrooge is saying, because obviously at this point he wants to reinvent himself. Spirit keeps pointing. And then Scrooge cries out, gets down on his knees. Am I the person who lay upon that bed dead? Spirit just points to him, to the grave, back and forth. No, 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 no. And he says, good spirit, please intercede for me, pity me, assure me that I can change these shadows that you've shown you. shown me. I will alter my life. I will honor Christmas in my heart all the time. I will live in the past, the present, the future, all of them. I won't shut out the lessons you have taught me. Oh, please sponge away my name from this stone. And he did everything he could. He kind of physically grabbed onto that hand that was pointing at the grave and struggled with him. Holding on, and then disappears. And Scrooge finds that he's struggling with his bedpost. He's back in his own room. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own. And he says, I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, praise, 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 praise. He praises Jacob Marley for having come and intervened for him. And he looks around. He realizes he's in his room. He's just unbelievable. He's had his own enlightenment experience. He's free. He's like liberated. It's like he sees total errors of ways. He sees another possibility of life. He's still alive. He can do it. And he's just deliriously happy. I'm as light as a feather, happy as an angel. Merry as a schoolboy, giddy as a drunken man. You know, he's just happy. He's actually running around. Okay. I mean, he's just, and it's a, and he just starts laughing. And he says, really for a man, or the comment, really for a man who'd been out of practice for so many years, his laugh was quite splendid. What does that mean? You know. Potential is there for all of us, but we need to step out of our heavy karma, whatever it is that weighs us down, right? Understand it, understand how it's conditioned us, but realize we have the power to transform our life, transform our mind. And again, then it's, you know, and then it's all about Christmas and all about Scrooge, and he's happy, and he buys food for the Cratchits, and he goes to his nephews, and they're kind of freaked out when he walks in. But you know, he basically lets them know that he's changed, and he's happy to be with them, and you know, and all this, and then going out, he runs into that you know, those people who had come asking him for money for the charity, and the guy kind of shies away from him in the street. And Scrooge says, oh, you know, Merry Christmas. And he whispers in his ear about this big donation he's going to make. And he's happy, happy, happy. He never dreamed that just walking around, looking at people, looking at the scene, he never, that could give him so much happiness. And again, he went to his nephew's house. And then, I better get cooking. So, you know, sort of the final scene is kind of the day after Christmas. And Bob Cratchit kind of comes in very sneakily into the office because he's late. And Scrooge kind of does his Scrooge sings, Cratchit, get over here, you know. And Cratchit expects to be fired or bawled out. And Scrooge says, you know, he's got a sense of humor now. He knows how to tease. He says, I got something very serious to tell you. Bob Cratchit's trembling. He says, I'm going to give you a raise. And I'm going to take care of your family. And I'm going to take care of Tiny Tim. You know, it's really kind of a wonderful scene. And it ends with Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. Tiny Tim did not die. He became a good as friend, a good as master, a good a man as anyone in London. Or anybody in the whole world. Some people laughed. They laughed to see the alteration in him, meaning you know, they couldn't believe it. But he said, "Let him laugh. He couldn't care less, because he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened in this world for good, which some people don't laugh at the outset. Anyhow, he wasn't disturbed at all. His own heart laughed." And that was quite enough for him. So that is the story of the Christmas Carol, Ebenezer Scrooge. And I think I don't want to belabor. I think the point is kind of obvious. You know, it's to me, it's an archetype of the spiritual journey, right? We don't go over here to create an alternative universe in ourselves. We use the tools that we've been given of mindfulness, concentration, insight, looking deeply into our own mind, unpacking our own causes and conditions, see that however we are now, for better or worse, it has nothing to do with us. We are the creation of causes and conditions. And when we see that clearly, and clearly see the effects that's had on us, and especially like Scrooge, when you see there is another way, you see, he learned there is another way. He saw people interacting in a very different way than he had always interacted. He realized there is another way to be in life. And when he realized he could change it, and he was still alive and still had the opportunity, like us, we're all still alive, no matter what our age. We all have the possibility, starting right now, to make any changes, shifts, transformations in our life. We don't have to live out the script sort of that we've been given in life. So it's a very hopeful message, as is our Dharma. So on that note, we will end the transmission of the Dharma of Scrooge for the year.